Picture the word good in your mind. Just the four letters, G-O-O-D. Now, drop one of those O's. What do you have? God. Now, take the word evil, add a D to the front, you get devil. It's a linguistic sleight of hand that is so simple, so visual, that we miss the profound psychological implications staring us right in the face. We aren't just looking at spelling. We are looking at the architecture of human agency.
It feels almost too convenient, doesn't it? Like a code hidden in plain English. Today, we are dissecting a provocative piece of writing by Ninax Antoli Howe, titled The One Letter Secret. The central thesis is that these entities we've spent millennia worshiping or fearing, God and the devil, are actually just linguistic masks for our own internal potential. Antoli Howe argues that by adding or removing a single letter, society effectively externalized our moral compass, turning internal directions into external characters. It's a heavy concept, the idea that the war isn't in the sky, but in the driver's seat of our own consciousness.
And that metaphor of the driver's seat is crucial here. The text explicitly mentions that most people operate on autopilot, unaware that their internal state is being steered by their surroundings. When you outsource your capacity for good to a sky god, or your capacity for evil to a ground demon, you fundamentally abdicate responsibility. You become a passenger in your own psyche. Antoli Howe suggests that this wasn't an accident, but a psychological wall erected by the architects of religious narrative to keep people reactive rather than proactive.
I have to stop you there for a second, because while the symbolism is potent, we need to address the elephant in the linguistic room. Antolin Gavio talks about architects evolving these words, but etymologically, is that accurate? Most linguists would point out that the English connection is a coincidence. God comes from the Proto-Germanic guten, meaning the invoked one, and good comes from goddess, meaning fitting or suitable. They aren't historically the same root. Same with devil and evil. Devil is from the Greek diabolos, the accuser, while evil is from the Proto-Germanic ubalos. So if the words are historically unrelated, does the argument crumble?
That is the standard academic rebuttal, and it is factually correct regarding the origins of the words. However, I don't think it dismantles Antoli Howe's point. If anything, it deepens it. We aren't talking about the etymology of the year 500 AD. We're talking about the psychological reality of the modern English speaker. Language is a living interface. Whether by accident or design, these words have converged in English to look like near twins. The brain is a pattern recognition machine. When a child sees the devil is just evil with a D, the association is forged regardless of what a Proto-Germanic dictionary says. The text is using this linguistic quirk as a mirror, as it calls it, to reveal a functional truth about how we process morality. It is less about historical linguistics and more about the phenomenology of belief.
So you're saying the one-letter secret is a tool for deconstructing our current mindset, rather than a literal historical conspiracy theory about how the words were invented. That makes sense. But let's dig into the externalization aspect. The text says, the most effective way to hide the truth is to put it right in front of people's eyes and change the label. How does the shift from internal direction to external character actually affect human behavior? If I believe the devil is real, how does that change my actions compared to believing devil is just my own potential for destruction?
This is where we cross from linguistics into hard psychology. Julian Rotter developed the concept of the locus of control in the 1950s, which is perfectly applicable here. If you have an external locus of control, you believe that outside forces, fate, luck, God, the devil, determine your life's outcomes. Antoli Howe describes this as being asleep. If you do something terrible, you can say, the devil tempted me. You are the victim of a cosmic assault. But if you shift to an internal locus of control, which is what this text calls the sovereign mind, you realize you are the container. You didn't get tempted by a demon. You allowed your energy to drift, as the author puts it, toward the bad way. The text is essentially a manifesto for radical self-responsibility.
The text uses the phrase glitch in the matrix to describe the similarity of the words. It suggests that seeing this connection wakes you up from the dogma. But historically, hasn't the personification of evil served a social purpose? I'm thinking about the evolution of Satan. You mentioned Diabolos earlier. In the Hebrew Bible, HaSatan wasn't a name, it was a job title, right? The adversary, or the prosecutor in the divine court. He worked for God. How did we get from a cosmic lawyer to the embodiment of pure evil that Anta Lehau says we need to reintegrate?
That evolution is fascinating and supports the author's narrative about control. In the book of Job, HaSatan is indeed just a tester, a functionary testing Job's loyalty. There is no dualistic war there. God is in charge of everything. But as history moved into the Second Temple period and interaction with Persian Zoroastrianism occurred, we absorbed this idea of a cosmic duality, a good force versus a bad force. The function became a character. By the time we get to the Middle Ages, the church had solidified this into a literal war for the human soul. Anta Lehau's argument is that this shift was a psychological wall. By making evil a superpowered entity distinct from us, we created a culture of fear. And fear, as the text notes, makes people easy to control. If the danger is external, you need an external savior, an institution to protect you.
It's the classic protection racket. There is a monster outside. Pay us, and we will keep the doors locked. But let's look at the internal side of this. The text says, you are the body that holds the energy of good and evil. This reminds me of Carl Jung's work on the shadow. Jung argued that the devil is essentially the shadow archetype, the parts of ourselves we repress and refuse to acknowledge. If we don't own our capacity for evil, we project it onto others.
Precisely. Jung's warning was that a person who has not integrated their shadow is capable of the worst atrocities because they believe they are acting solely for good. They project their own inner devil onto their enemies. Anta Lehau's text mirrors this Jungian integration. The author writes, "Whichever side you focus on is the one you become." This is a crucial distinction. It doesn't say you destroy the devil. It implies that you recognize that the D energy is part of your own potential. If you are unconscious or reactive, to use the text term, you become the devil of your own life because you refuse to take the steering wheel.
That phrase, steering wheel, appears in the section on the sovereign mind. It says, the one-letter difference is actually a safety switch. This implies a mechanism of control, like a toggle on a dashboard. If I am in a devil state, I don't need an exorcism. I need to shift my focus one click back toward good. It sounds empowering, but is it too reductive? Can we really just click our way out of destructive behavior? Real pathology or systemic trauma seems harder to navigate than just flipping a linguistic switch.
I think the switch is a metaphor for the moment of awareness, not necessarily the ease of the work. The text distinguishes between autopilot and manual control. Switching to manual doesn't mean the car drives itself. It means you have to drive it, which is actually much harder. The autopilot is the state of flowing with one's surroundings. If your environment is toxic, you become toxic. That is easy. It requires zero effort. Waking up and realizing I am the author of this experience places a tremendous burden on the individual. It removes the comfort of victimhood. You can no longer say, the system made me do it, or the devil made me do it. You have to admit, I allowed my energy to drift.
That connects to the line, you cannot be taken advantage of by those who use fear as a weapon, once you see that the devil they are threatening you with is just a misspelled version of your own unused power. That is a radical political statement as much as a spiritual one. It suggests that political or religious fear-mongering only works if we buy into the externalization. If we own our power, the threat evaporates.
It strikes at the heart of how authority functions. Historically, authority derives legitimacy from protecting the populace from chaos. If chaos, the devil, is revealed to be an internal state of the individual, the external protector becomes obsolete. This is why Gnostic traditions, which emphasized inner knowledge, gnosis, over external dogma, were often persecuted. They threatened the hierarchy. Antony Howe is tapping into that same vein of thought. When the text says, the higher understanding is this, you are the author, not the character, it is inviting the reader to step out of the narrative entirely. A character in a book has to follow the plot. The author can rewrite it. But again, this requires a level of consciousness that the text admits most people are asleep to.
Let's talk about the one-letter bridge mentioned in the Wisdom of the Sovereign Mind. It says, good and evil are not enemies, they are the left and right hands of the human experience. This non-dualistic view is very common in Eastern philosophy, like the Taoist yin and yang, but it feels very alien to the Western mind, which is so deeply conditioned by that Manichaean war between light and dark. How does a person raised in a dualistic culture actually practice this one-body mindset without falling into moral relativism? Because if good and evil are just hands of the same body, does that mean they are equal?
That is the danger zone, and the text navigates it carefully. It doesn't say they are morally equivalent. It says they are ontologically unified. They exist in the same container. The text explicitly encourages activating the good and shifting focus to the O, the order. It's not suggesting we should be indifferent to evil. It's suggesting we stop treating evil as a foreign invader. Think of it like health and sickness. Sickness isn't an external demon attacking you. It's a state of your own body where the order has broken down. You don't go to war with your body. You try to restore balance. If we view evil as a misalignment of our own potential, a drift, as the author calls it, then the remedy isn't hatred or violence, but correction, alignment. It shifts the response from punitive to restorative.
I like the health analogy. It grounds the abstract idea of energy. The text also warns that those who understand this one-letter secret can use it to take advantage of those who don't. It implies that the architects, the elites, the system, whoever you want to label them, are essentially practicing this sovereign mindset while keeping everyone else in the autopilot mindset. It creates a two-tiered reality: the masters who know it's a game of psychology, and the masses who think it's a war of gods and monsters.
It is the difference between the stage magician and the audience. The magician knows the trick is mechanical, the audience thinks it is magic. As long as the audience believes in magic, the magician has power over them. Antony Howe is effectively handing the audience the manual to the trick. He's saying, look, it's just a letter, it's just a label, stop reacting to the flash and smoke. Once you see the mechanism, the awe and the fear disappears. You realize that the devil was just your own shadow cast on the wall by a light someone else was holding. The call to action here is to take the light into your own hands.
And that leads to the conclusion, total freedom. But freedom is terrifying. The text says we move into manual control of your soul. I think about how many people actually prefer autopilot. Autopilot is safe. It's predictable. If I fail, I can blame my upbringing, my society, or the devil. If I am the sovereign author and my life is a mess, there is no one left to blame but myself. Is society ready for this kind of responsibility?
Likely not on a mass scale, which is why the text describes the majority as being asleep. Waking up is often painful. Plato's Allegory of the Cave describes the process of seeing the truth not as a joyful epiphany, but as a blinding, painful struggle. But the alternative, according to Anatoly Hau, is to remain a character in someone else's story. The one-letter bridge offers a way back to ourselves. It's a reminder that the distance between being a devil, destructive, chaotic, and God, creative, ordered, in your own microcosm isn't an uncrossable chasm, it's a micro-adjustment of will. It's the difference of a single impulse, a single choice. That proximity is what makes it both dangerous and hopeful. You are always only one click away from your highest potential or your lowest.
It reframes the human condition from a battlefield to a laboratory. We are constantly experimenting with these energies. Ninak's Antaliha's reflection forces us to look at the words we use every day and ask, are these walls or are they mirrors? If we can see the good inside the God and the evil inside the devil, we stop scanning the horizon for rescue and start doing the work right here in the driver's seat.